Tax refund season is here. Save up to $850 at Mattress Warehouse. Plus, get a free adjustable base with select purchases. And every mattress at Mattress Warehouse is backed by our lifetime price guarantee. Make your refund go farther, only at Mattress Warehouse.
Welcome to I Like Your Work, a podcast dedicated to interviewing creative people from painters and artists to collectors and curators, people who are involved in a creative lifestyle and also in building community within the arts.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to I Like Your Work. I am really excited to share this week's episode with you, which was recorded live at Contemporary Art Matters in Columbus, Ohio, with the artist Dion Johnson for the opening of his exhibition, Time Travel. This exhibition is currently on view till February 26th. It was such a fun time recording this and also the opening in general. The show is fabulous, so if you're in the Columbus area, I hope that you check it out. Now, before we dive into that interview, I have a couple of things I want to share with you guys. First off, if you're interested in Chautauqua Visual Arts two-week residency, the deadline to apply is today. Our two-week residency is for artists who are interested in creating work in their studio, connecting with other artists, and also having curators and gallerists into their space to have a studio visit and conversation with. This year, we're really excited that Garrett Klein of Massey Klein Gallery in New York City will be our visiting gallerist, so he will be doing studio visits with every artist who is in our two-week residency. So you guys can find a link to the application in the show notes, and also you can head over to art.chq.org to learn more. Again, today, the Friday the 20th, is the last day to apply, but if you get your application started, you do have a grace period to finish it, and it's a pretty straightforward application. I also want to share a couple travel opportunities with you guys. First off, I'm going to be teaching a class in Italy, The Symbolic Landscape. I'm really excited about this class. It's going to be wonderful to be in the Italian landscape, painting. You get your own studio space with this class, and we also go on excursions. So it is going to be such an incredible time. So if you are looking to go to Italy this May, it is coming up, you can head over to the show notes and sign up. There's a few spots left. I'm also excited to share that I will be taking a group to Oaxaca, Mexico in the fall. This is actually through Chautauqua Institution. I am very excited. Many of you who have listened to the show over the years know I took a group of artists to Oaxaca about 3 years ago, and we had such a blast. I loved my time in Oaxaca so much that we are going back. You guys can find out the itinerary, the day by day, by heading to the link in the show notes. It is at chq.org. You can also just Google Erica B. Hess in Oaxaca and it will pull up, but it is going to be such a wonderful time. It is 6 nights where we're going to be staying in the heart of Oaxaca, just steps away from the cathedral. We are going to go on a walking tour. We are also going to do a lot of behind the scenes studio visits, including going to a potter's studio. We are going to go to weaver's spaces. We're also going to be doing a lot of behind the scenes in printmaking and even a paper factory where members of the community produce paper using natural fibers. There is so much in this trip. It's going to be amazing. Again, if this sounds like something interesting to you, I suggest you go check out the day-by-day itinerary. It's completely laid out at the link. And this is going to be in October. So October 14th through the 20th. So this coming fall. Also, feel free to DM us if you have any questions. You can always head over to I Like Your Work podcast on Instagram, and you can find us over online at ilikeyourworkpodcast.com. All right, so let's go ahead and dive into this week's episode with Dion Johnson. Dion Johnson is a Los Angeles, California-based abstract painter. Born in Bel Air, Ohio, he attended Yale Norfolk Summer School of Music and Art in 1996, received his BFA from The Ohio State University in 1997, and earned his MFA from Claremont Graduate University in 2000. Johnson has participated in numerous solo and group exhibitions across the United States. In 2023, he co-curated Two of Us, Dion Johnson, and Michael Refsnyder at Contemporary Art Matters in Columbus, Ohio. Ohio, and recent solo exhibitions include Scott Richards Contemporary Art in San Francisco, Keller Gallery at Point Loma Nazarene University, San Diego, Western Projects, Los Angeles, California, Bentley Gallery in Phoenix, DeBuck Gallery in New York City, and Holly Johnson Gallery in Dallas, Texas. His work has also been featured in group exhibitions at Contemporary Art Matters, Scott Richards Contemporary Art San Francisco, and many, many others. His work has been reviewed and featured in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, Art News, and Art Form. In 2024, Johnson created a site-specific wall installation information exchange for the Columbus Metropolitan Library in Columbus, Ohio. His work can be found in the permanent collections of the Columbus Museum of Art, Twitter, Capital Group Companies in Los Angeles, Museum of Art and History, Lancaster, California, Creative Arts Agency in Los Angeles, and the Pizzuti Collection in Columbus, Ohio. Johnson serves as Assistant Chair of Foundation Studio at the Otis College of Art and Design in Los Angeles. So without further ado, let's dive in to this interview with Dion. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for coming out today to see the wonderful work of Dion Johnson. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, I'm thrilled. What I love about this show and why I'm excited that we are taping it live at Contemporary Art Matters is that we get to see the history of your making. We get to see where you are now, these incredible colors, the light that you have in your work, but we also get to see where the materials were for you and how they've built.
No, that's a very good way to start things off, and a good maybe lens of how to think about time travel, which could mean a lot of different things. But as I step into the exhibition, it feels very kind of lighthearted, kind of floating back to different times of different bodies of work and looking at things with fresh eyes, which, I mean, feels really great.
I like this idea that you're talking about where you're able to look back and have this moment where you can reflect, because I was reading a bit about your history and where you're from. So I was hoping you could share with the listeners and with everybody here where you're from and how you first really became interested in the arts.
Oh, right. Well, good question. I grew up in Ohio. I was born in Bel Air and right along the Ohio River in Bridgeport, Ohio, adjacent to West Virginia and Pennsylvania. I grew up a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. That's important to mention. So there wasn't like a large museum or any sort of like art activity that drew me into understanding what it would be like to make paintings or to study art at that age. But my parents were both educators. And one thing that my father would often do would bring me, you know, quote unquote, drawing paper home. And so that would be a fun, like, wintertime activity or summer activity to just sort of be creative. And that's something that I think was very much supported in my childhood, not thinking that it would lead to any sort of career choices, but just a fun way to engage creativity. Then, you know, moving forward, I guess interests as like a teenager or, you know, when you sort of find yourself gravitating towards, you know, certain interests at an age, like things like skateboarding or listening to different kinds of music and, you know, bands that, you know, might have a certain sort of feel or skateboard graphics or, you know, wanting to go and have these sort of like experiences, like seeing a band like Dinosaur Jr. with your friends or skateboarding and trying to come up with new things and tricks and surprises. There's something inventive about those activities that might be like art adjacent in some way, but in different modes of like, you know, music or you know, athletic activity.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering about the skateboarding, and I thought to myself, am I wondering if Dion has a skate background because of his work or because if he's in California or both? But I love hearing about like how that impacted you. Like,
okay, right. No, but let me get to that kind of the backwards way. Time travel means also kind of like maybe these paintings and interests and ideas kind of like, without me knowing, got me to California, because as a, you know, a 13-year-old, 14-year-old reading like Thrasher magazine and seeing like all these skateboarding places and people and things, it was largely about California. So when I went there for graduate school just before like 1998, it was like, oh, this is where all those things are. This is where a lot of that culture came from. And it made sense to me. So there is something about like when I look back to some of the paintings on the walls here, something that's almost like, you know, kind of predicts the future in a way.
I love that. Yeah, see, you ended up getting your BFA at Ohio State University. And then, like you mentioned, you went on to graduate school in California. And I was wondering, the colors are so vibrant. There's such a different way that the sun kind of interacts with you in California versus growing up in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how that move impacted you as an artist, like how it impacted maybe your materials, your sense of space, color.
Well, I think like a lot of artists, historically and presently, you're looking towards your environment and your own personal experiences to, you know, inspire you. Maybe sometimes subconsciously, those elements kind of seep in. But there is something about California light and color. I mean, there's a movement called Light and Space, of course, that is a part of, like, you know, what I think I was responding to when I moved to California. But even before then, I think color, I realized, and that's why painting as a, you know, versus say sculpture or another art form was most appealing to me, is that color can be this kind of like pure energy and do so many different things to, you know, affect the viewer or to convey emotion or to experiment with layers. And, you know, you'll able to create something that you didn't quite know what was possible. So there's something incredibly complex about color, and being in a place, an environment like Southern California, just seemed all the more reason to exploit that.
I love this. I also love how you're talking about why you chose to be in painting, you know, rather than sculpture, which is a wonderful field, et cetera, mm-hmm. but because color is such a core component of being able to take this 2D flat surface, energize it, and allow somebody to respond to it. I have so many questions about color for you. And I also have questions about the material. So I'd love to, like, we were kind of talking about this before we started the interview.
Yeah.
About how you have this wonderful moment of work that spans quite a bit of your career. And in some of the paintings, the earlier paintings, there are these thicker areas where you're really starting to play with having a flatter background, and then you have like these skins, et cetera, that start to almost become a sculptural element within the field.
Yeah.
So could you talk a little bit about that making, and then also how you started to transition out of that?
Right. Okay. So one of the things that was always interesting to me is, like, you know, what am I going to paint? Is also, how am I going to paint it? And what can this material and what can this like paint stuff do? Is it smooth and transparent? And does it draw you in? Does it sort of build up into something that's wet into wet and unexpectedly textural? Or can it be like a surface that's painted onto glass, peeled off and reapplied? So there's this playful puzzle-like way of approaching something. And if there is, like, I'm going to figure this out through trial and error and try to surprise myself with what I can create, that's a certain level of engagement that maybe I want a viewer to look at it and come to it and, like, figure out where this is or what this experience is, and have maybe that level of engagement. Like, if I was, you know, having fun making something, someone should maybe enjoy looking at it.
It makes me think of skateboarding, what you were talking about earlier about like inventing these tricks, you know,
yeah,
or trying
it's
these
true.
Different
it
things.
Is related. I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I also love how you mentioned, yeah, how you want to surprise yourself in it. Because I do find that within the work, mostly too in the more current work, where you have like these little moments of lines that are like hidden in a pocket, and you have these larger swoops of color. So there's always kind of something to like kind of draw me in there. But now I'd love to really dive into the color. I have been able to watch some really wonderful videos of you applying paint and working in the studio.
Thank you.
Oh, I was like kind of stalking them, I'm not gonna lie. I was like, oh, look how he's putting that down there, man. Maybe I should, you know, like, yeah, it's really wonderful how engaged you are with the material itself, which we've been talking about, you know, historically you've been interested. So can you first tell me like how you select the palette for a piece when you're getting into it. Like, do you pre-select this? Are you like, do you have like color aid paper out there you're pushing together? Like, how does that work for you?
Right. Well, let me talk about like work from, you know, maybe some of the earliest works in the show to present, because I think there is something about how there is a planning to something, whether it's drawing out or laying out. In early work, there were like diagrams or images or even photographs that I was interested in that I might sort of draw color from or want to sort of include in some way indirectly into the painting. And so there might be like a manila folder of like things that might, you know, feed into a painting as ingredients in that way. And graph paper, color pencils would start to map out like what I'd want to do. So there is a certain amount of planning, but then it was always balanced by this sort of intuition. Like if you layer this onto this, you don't know what the third thing might be after those. Like what is that combination of things evoke or, you know, suggest what should come next? And I don't know, maybe around like mid-2000s, I became more versed in like Adobe and Photoshop and things like that and realized, oh, I could take photographs of a painting that was started and then input that and mess around with, you know, what colors could come next with some different ideas of maybe trying different outcomes, like merging like a beginning of a painting that's physically made with something that is like digitally laid on top. And then I just became more and more skilled at mixing colors that were on the computer screen. So now I draw much more with Photoshop and know what the limits are of like, I'm literally mixing colors and then like letting it dry with a hairdryer on a white piece of paper and holding it up to my computer screen and being like, oh, okay, I can achieve that and layer this. So there is a sort of careful amount of like measuring on what happens. But then when it becomes full size, you know, like 60 inches across and spray applied through like a air compressor gun, it might look and feel totally different. And then that's where the adjustment and responding to something you've put down comes in. And as you're saying, you're getting surprised by coming across these little pockets of lines and things like that. There's often to a point where the puzzle takes a turn I wasn't expecting. And then I have to improvise. I have to respond intuitively and figure out now what's going to make this painting finish. And so that's a lot of the challenge and a lot of the fun, is knowing that as much as you plan to stay nimble and aware and experiment is really kind of the magic to it.
One of the things I saw you doing as well, I saw the spray gun, and I love this idea of like digital color and how that has like impacted a generation of artists. You know what I mean?
Totally.
I remember back in like the early 2000s, there was this website called Color Picker, and you could like move a color on the color wheel and see it.
Oh, I think I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yes. And I just think like so many of us have experimented with it. It's interesting to think how, if we could time travel into the future, how it would have impacted all of us. But one of the things I saw that you were doing in your studio is that you would have pieces laid flat and then you would put paint and then you would end up, you know, using like a scraper and scrape it down. And my question became on that is, I know you're an avid biker. When you were down looking at those, I mean, are you thinking about the trails and the movement that can happen? Is that part of it?
Like, oh, wow. I love that idea of perspective and like the surface being like what you might experience sort of like traveling and turning on a bicycle. And I think there might be a connection there that I'm not aware of until you just said it. But there is something I think being in tune with, and there's, I think, that transition from something being athletic, like leaning, turning a bicycle, and then also sort of wanting to make these smooth transition both in color translucency and also these sort of taped off areas that become transition kind of curves and arcs on the painting, is that I think those are really related. Seeing the world pass by me as I'm bicycling, especially roads that are up in the mountains where it's, you know, very little like traffic or other people whatsoever, and you're really taking in the environment around you. Like, for instance, I'm looking across at a painting that's sort of like greens and blues there, like just seeing sort of sky and trees mixed together as you're speeding by is certainly, I would say, a part of that painting.
I love this idea of movement. You know what I mean? Of just like moving and our periphery, you know? And so like painting what is in our periphery is so interesting, an idea to play with. So I have another question just about you in your studio. Like, again, I love these videos. I'll be linking them for everybody who is listening to the podcast so you can check them out because they're really well done. But can you tell us like what a day is like in the studio for you? Like, what do you do first? Do you make a cup of tea? Do you get set up? Are you drawing from the pieces before? Do you jump in? Like, what is that like for you?
Oh, that's great. I like to think that there's something from the previous studio day, whether it was the previous weekend or the previous evening, where I've left a place to pick up on. And so it seems like I believe in like regular, like keeping regular hours. Like there might not be a lot of activity happening as far as making a painting, but being in the environment, you're sort of ready to go. And so music and coffee are great aspects to sort of like fuel the painting activity, but also just having ideas ready and sort of laid out, whether that be looking at what paintings I want to have prepared and ready to go and thinking about maybe a project or a deadline and kind of keeping a steady workflow of things. I'd like to work on more than one thing at a time. I might be drawing out some ideas on my computer and selecting colors in Photoshop, and I might be tidying up because one table, the painting is finished and I got to sort of get things back in order because, you know, as I make paintings, the messier the studio gets, and then you kind of clean up and sort of start over again. It's like, I don't know, maybe I don't think I could like make like cookies or cupcakes without making a mess in the kitchen. And there's something like that to it, I guess. It's like, okay, now let's wash the dishes. Let's clean the spray guns. Let's tidy up again and we can make something cool.
Yeah, I was going to say too, like for you with the reset, it would be really important with the spray guns. Like if you let that clog up, you're going to be like out a bunch of money or like any of the scrapers. And
yeah.
Stuff, you know? Like it seems like, yeah, but you get lost within the making of it and then you get to do the reset.
Right. No, there's something really enjoyable about like, once that's drying, I'll work on this. And once I sort of work on this, I'll clean up that area. And you kind of work around in these like little footsteps from work table to work table to cleaning up to, you know, mixing color. And then before you know it, you've got something done.
I love it. And you mentioned you worked on more than one piece at a time. I was actually really curious about this question for you. I was like, oh, I wonder, like, so when working with one more than one piece at a time, do you tend to work on the same scale, different scales? Is any of that kind of in your mind, or it's more just like, okay, I have this endpoint I want to get to for a show or whatever it might be.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're just all like kind of cohesive and talking to each other.
I would say in sort of like pairs and groups, they're cohesive and talking to each other. I often think of like paintings that were made, you know, simultaneously or back to back, kind of like siblings. Mm-hmm. And that like there's usually enough of an idea, if it's a good idea, to span over several paintings in different colors and sizes. And so that's a great way to think about painting, is like not everything has to kind of like be isolated into one rectangle. And so sometimes it's practical to work on several paintings that are 40 by 60 inches, but sometimes it's really rewarding to work on something small and get it done quickly. And then you can work on a larger painting that's going to take more time because, you know, then it's like, oh, well, I got those done kind of speedy. Now I'm feeling good about that. And again, there's something to that I think satisfaction of like making something, looking at it and being like, okay, now what's next? That's that surprise element that I think a lot of my painter friends are really into. Like one painting kind of fuels what you want to try next.
Mm-hmm. I would completely agree with that. And I also love the idea of sibling paintings, you know, because you have to have groupings and they like are in a conversation with one another, you know, like responding for better or worse sometimes, you know, to one another. You started to kind of give this idea of sometimes it's great to work on a smaller painting because it gives you kind of like a win, right? Like
yeah.
Sometimes you need that in the studio. And I think that is really great advice for some younger painters who are coming up that might be, you know, working on some things. And I was wondering if you had any other advice that you've kind of learned along the way or that maybe you've given to a friend, student, whoever, that you could share with the listeners who are
Right. In terms of like studio practice and, you know, just doing what you do. Take risks. Mm-hmm. I mean, making mistakes is a really good investment. I've always benefited from learning more by pushing something too far and understanding like where my limits are rather than like not pushing it far enough. Keeping regular hours is something I mentioned earlier. And I think that's important too. It's not about like, I don't know, when inspiration hits or I'm, you know, today feels like a good painting day. It's like go in every day and then it might become a good day because it's a painting day. And also just keep in touch with other artists that you like and are friends with and respect, because I get so much feedback, you know, staying in touch with artists, not only in Southern California, but in other places, just because it's like you have so much in common and what we do is often isolated and, you know, you're working by yourself in the studio. And sometimes I'm really fortunate to work with someone in my studio helping me do things. But it's a fairly solo process. So having that community is important.
I think that is such a good point because we are isolated quite a bit. And it's hard to talk. You can't like go to the grocery store and talk to somebody about like, hey, so how's the cadmium over in your studio? You know what I mean? Like they're just not going to be able to follow. Yeah, right. So I think that's really important. So before we go to the audience to see if there's any questions or anything, I would love to know if there is a painting in this group here that really stands out to you, and if you could share with us why it's standing, why it stands out to you.
Ooh, I'm gonna say there's a sort of medium small-ish horizontal painting. I think it's called Squeeze, and that's standing out because it really is this transition point of like letting imagery and narrative, letting go of that in some respects, and it being a much more sort of open painting about color as like sensation or a sense of place, and also kind of the physicality of how different shapes and ways in which things abut become like this sort of physical sense. Because just as the painting suggests, there is this kind of jostling of colors, lights to darks, and these sort of bright moments that advance and recede. And that becomes a different activity than the paintings before it that were maybe dependent on like a narrative or some sort of like hint of imagery that was the way to bring a viewer into something. I would say that Squeeze is a painting that pushes out into the viewer's space and becomes more interactive in many respects. It's, like I said, a medium small painting, but the space it creates is much larger than that.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I actually really love this painting of yours because there's also like, there's a play with the paint too, with how thin, thick. I mean, you do that in a lot of paintings, but there's like the special quality here. I need to go back up and look at it close again, but it also seems like there's some matte, like matte areas in it as well that are kind of happening that feel different from other works. So I know I said I was going to turn it over to let people ask questions, but I actually have another question.
Please go ahead.
That came up. So you ended up letting go of imagery, as you were mentioning.
Uh-huh.
How was that transition for you? Because I feel like I talk to a lot of artists who, when there is like such a big like drop of sorts or change, that it becomes scary to navigate or hard to navigate. Was it hard for you to get rid of the representational elements in your paintings, or was that, were you ready to let that go?
Good question. And there's a lot of different ways to answer it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that my paintings now feel more about real life experiences without imagery and the way they might deal with like memories or places or specific activities that are very sort of tangible. And the works with imagery seem to be maybe more abstract because they're sort of more like fragments of things that are somehow maybe more fictional. And I let go of imagery out of this way that as I was painting like diagrams or flowers or, you know, different natural elements or kind of like interested in mechanical things, that I just got to a point where I wasn't fascinated by them anymore. And the colors and the spaces and the way that layering in a painting became something that was more engaging. And that's never, I've never felt like there's territory I couldn't grow in that direction. So I continued that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, having options, opportunities to sort of like find new ways to create color experiences, I feel more at home in this direction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Was there a moment where there was like a fear of letting that go? Like, where is this going to take me? Or like, you're really good at rendering, for example. Was there anything like that where you're like, oh no, I don't know if I can totally, or you were known for the work? Was there any of that or no?
I mean, it kind of just happened more naturally that like abstraction overtook any kind of like narrative or representation in a way that, you know, I could see certain interests just, you know, being more exciting for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And even in the artists I was looking at, it wasn't really looking at like artists, both historically and contemporary, that were like dealing with imagery as much. I was really looking more at like painters using color abstraction. And so it's like, yeah, that felt like a natural fit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. Well, again, the show looks wonderful.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And now I would just love to turn it over to the audience if anybody has any questions for Dion.
I always do, but I don't have to go first.
Go ahead.
I really love the pairings that you put together. And arranging the show. Do you want to talk about like why you picked things to put together?
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Well, I think when I was asked to come up with a show title, I wanted a show title that made sense, so that something that I made maybe a year or so ago could have a really direct conversation with something that was made 10 or 15 years ago. And color was that really strong link. Like if there was this visual conversation happening back and forth in like atmospheric blues and greens from one piece to another, that just seemed to open up the space. And the two paintings from, you know, different bodies of work and times really fed off each other.
It is. It is interesting how there's really the same palette in these two paintings next to you here, you know.
It's kind of freaks me out. Yeah, I know.
And there are other examples where you're using a very silvery palette, or it's not that things don't change and move around, but it's interesting how you develop a language, a narrative, a point of view with the same tools. And
yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think I ever like fully abandon anything in terms of painting. There's always like ways to kind of come back and you expand your area of what you're able to do or what your interests are, what you're willing to take a risk to do. And so some of those color combinations or ways of incorporating like stripe shapes, you know, side by side, it might get turned 90 degrees, but it's been, you know, something I've liked and have brought back.
Hmm. So I don't remember you being a skater, which is
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that about you. But I think sometimes that sort of that youthful approach has kind of like a quirky, jokey kind of approach, you know, like the little jokester. And maybe there's some mature going now with writing, but just really focusing on the pure abstraction is so elevated and refined.
Yes and no. I mean, I think there's something about like, if it's not skateboarding, any sort of sport where you kind of devote like, you know, practicing something over and over, whether that's, you know, layups in basketball, or I wish I could juggle a soccer ball. I think it looks so cool. But the amount of time that you sort of put into that, like honing a craft and also finding a way to sort of do something and challenge yourself is a way of pushing yourself. And I think that's also a part of what I want painting to be, is like not doing the same thing, but, you know, building on skills that you have and like, well, what could I do next? What would that next level be?
So what's your next basket challenge?
What's my next what?
Challenge.
To get back into shape, I think. I mean, I know I got a friend who emailed me and said, hey, do you want to do a bike ride this weekend? I was like, no, I got to go to Columbus. But when I get back, man, let's ride, you know? And so, you know, it's a balance having like those activities in life and in studio. And I think they feed off each other in a good way.
Mm.
Yeah.
I want to follow up on that question too with what's next. Do you have anything planned within the studio or anything that you're working on right now?
I'm been invited to curate a show at Peter Mendenhall Gallery. He has a space in Pasadena, very close to where I live, where there's myself and eight other wonderful Southern California painters. So that's another thing that's been cool. And I think it gets that question you asked earlier about what would you suggest or, you know, say is a beneficial thing to listeners is that's a sense of community, like knowing that like, oh, like a painter like Michael Reesnyder or June Edmonds or Liat Yosifer, like I really identify with their practices. What if we did a show together? And the fact that they're excited to do so is just such a rewarding feeling. And so that'll be happening later this month at Peter Mendenhall Gallery.
Okay, great. We'll have to put a link into that as
totally,
well.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Share some images and whatnot.
Yeah. So again, one thing leads to the next, whether it's like a painting to a painting or a show to a show or your relationships with other artists.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
What about your new job?
Oh, right. I am, I think, just finished my fourth week as an assistant chair at Otis College of Art and Design for the foundation program. So being in that creative environment of like a really, I think, incredible art school where I've known a number of my friends went to school there and who, you know, I think it's a really wonderful academic environment to be in. That's been a part of like my creative practice to be, you know, teaching or curating at schools and universities. And so, again, there's that really good sense of like, I think having a creative environment that I'm a part of.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Job.
I'm very fortunate.
I like hearing about how it feeds you creatively because I tend to ask a lot of artists who are on here who teach. I feel like there's almost like two ways that artists go where they feel very much energized by the students or they feel like they're giving a lot of themselves to the students and it's not really giving them energy. It's just a depletion. But it sounds like for you that it's something that feeds you being able to teach, be around them, see what they're making.
I mean, I found like a while ago that like I like to keep a lot of like art catalogs or monographs or things like in my office at my school because I found like I was actually looking at books more if I was sharing it with a student and being like, oh yeah, here you should really look at her. You would like her paintings and that sort of a thing. And so just naturally having those conversations and saying like, hey, I'm excited by this. Check this out. You know, is a fun way to kind of give back, but also you get from. It gives back to me as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's really smart. I like that. You can be like, here, look at all this great stuff and get really excited about it.
Yeah.
And then they're learning something from you, but also from the catalog.
Like, oh, I see that sketchbook you have there. Look at this Amy Solman book. Tell me what you think.
Oh, I love that. Is there any other questions that people would like to ask Dion before we wrap it up?
Sure. I'll have a question.
Yeah.
So I don't bringing in the bike riding. So I don't know if you addressed this earlier, but as I'm looking around and thinking about even the difference between like, oh, abstraction or representational work and so that can be a shift. I do really resonate with like your response of like, is it? Like, I don't know, I feel like, said, like a lot of times it's like, is it? But two things that were coming up to me was like, as we were talking about palette, it's like, it does seem like this seasonal type of arrangement. That's there. And then that makes me think of time.
Oh, yeah.
And also when you were talking about bike riding and some of the representational work, I could see it in like a literal way. But even in the abstraction, this like vibration of the passage of time. I'm just curious if that is something that you think about or is intentional or just, you know, my own baggage that, you know.
No, I think
it's a question. I'm seeing like there's like a lot of time, even though there is so many verticals and almost like a perceived stillness, but I'm seeing a lot of fluidity in time.
No, I think you're absolutely picking up on what I feel is here. And I mean, the show title is Time Travel, words that imply both the passage of time and movement. So certainly, I think that's applicable to different pieces in different ways, but an overarching theme. I love that paintings sit perfectly still, but as a viewer, you kind of navigate through different layers or sort of larger areas and find sort of smaller details and you get lost on a little journey that takes time to sort of take it all in because it's all there at once and it's kind of up to us and that's where it becomes participatory and the painting kind of like opens up and then you go back into it and there's that exchange as well. So there's, you know, maybe different levels of velocity, or as Eric was saying, this kind of like, you know, sensation of periphery, I think is really important. And that I think relates to bicycling, and any bicycle question is a good question. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think, you know,
with pain.
Totally.
Like there's often this like detachment that people make, right? They're like physical and then mental. And that's like, that's something, the physicality of the bike that was like intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that your body sort of tilts as you make a turn and you can kind of feel the surface of the road picking up speed, like thinking of, as I think Erica was saying, like pulling some of those large knives across the surface of the painting and like feeling the tactility of that sort of thick paint spread. I mean, those levels and sensibilities of like touch and, you know, nuance are I think, you know, these really wonderful things. And that's why it's so wonderful to experience paintings in person, get up close and sort of see those moments and get lost in them.
I just have like this wonderful, like thinking about the Olympics, like, obviously it's Winter Olympics, but some Olympic thingy, like bike racing and like those like crazy turns. They're going to like be falling over and having that visual.
Totally. No, that's super exciting. I've got to see some of those velodrome races in person. Lots of fun. Yeah. Good question. Thank you.
You asked also about the seasons. And with such a bright palette, being in Ohio, especially in the snow today, you think it's artificial. But it's not really artificial.
No.
Really come from a natural experience, don't they? Or
it might be a heightened and like a way in which become, you know, I think our feelings add this way in which, you know, our experiences become heightened and color can do that too. So if there is this real world experience and you want it to be like a vivid translucent yellow, all the more reason to do that. But seasons are really important. I mean, I love the Rouen Cathedral facades and the changing of light. And I also love Jasper John's four different seasons and seeing like how, you know, two artists working totally differently at different times can like take on the idea of just the changing of seasons. And, you know, that passage of time becomes this really wonderful experience that I think anyone can relate to.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I just have to ask, do you still skateboard?
It's funny you should say that. I think the last time I did was my cousins who are, almost teenager and teenager at the skate park in Worthington. And I was pretty wobbly, but we had fun just kind of like with their skateboards. And I got one going around, and maybe that was a couple few years ago. Yeah. But it was wonderful to see them having fun with it and me realizing that, like, whew, I sure am out of practice here. But no, it's a fun activity.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much, Dion.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. You're so very welcome. I'm so glad I could do this.
All right. Well, thank you guys for being here.
A huge thank you to Dion for being on the show. Again, it was such a pleasure to be in person having this conversation about Dion's work, how it has shifted over the years, the ideas that inform it, and so much more. I hope if you are in the Columbus area that you check out the exhibition at Contemporary Art Matters. Again, that is up till February 26th. I also hope that you have a chance to check out the different opportunities to travel this year, including to Italy, and also to Oaxaca. All those links are in our show notes, and we'll be sending them out in our newsletter. We send out one newsletter a week that just shares what interviews we have and what opportunities. You guys can sign up for the newsletter over at ilikeyourworkpodcast.com. And of course, we're always sharing information on Instagram and on Patreon. We recently launched on there, and we have a lot of great resources in Patreon, including different professional practice classes you can take, and also just fun information of what artists are looking at. Thank you again for joining us for this interview, and I hope you have a great week in the studio.
You can't always predict what's next, but you can be ready for it in a BMW SUV. The performance-driven X1 comes built for every journey. While the X3's sporty design and innovative technology keep your drive connected, the X5 blends performance with a commanding presence. Or make it even bigger with three rows of luxurious seating in the X7. For every road, there's an X built to drive it. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Take advantage of exceptional lease offers today.
Turn your tax refund into better sleep at Mattress Warehouse. Save up to $850. Plus, get a free adjustable base and enjoy our exclusive lifetime price guarantee. Only at Mattress Warehouse. Because we're more than a mattress store. We're Mattress Warehouse.